Over the last 2 years or so, we've heard many disconnected voices clamoring for justice. Some of them have made some very good points and have put out some things that really need to be listened to and be thoughtful of, while others are making claims and promoting ideologies that, one, don't really fit the definition of justice, and two, are very anti-God. And so this morning, I want us to ask, and I want us to think about the question, what does biblical justice look like? That is a question that God answers pretty specifically in several places throughout the scriptures. And Zechariah, as much as making a statement, is giving an acknowledgement to that fact. The passage we're going to look at this morning is just that. It's a reminder of what has happened in the past, and a challenge to the people of Judah to listen and learn from those who have gone before us, as it should be to you and to me, a lesson, a challenge to how we're called to live for God. Zechariah was reminding the people that God had used the prophets in the past to speak to his people. That the people rejected his wooing call to return to him, and in so doing, brought about the punishment of God upon them. The concept of biblical justice, though I think probably we should refer to it more as godly justice or Yahwistic justice, but we'll just stick with biblical justice, is the center of what Yahweh called them to do to avoid the coming catastrophe. The Old Testament prophets that Zechariah speaks of, they were not alone. Jesus, throughout his ministry, in various ways, called for the people, especially the Jewish leaders, to practice justice. Most notable is what looks like two instances where the greatest commandment is spoken of. In parallel passages in Matthew chapter 22, verses 36 through 39, and Mark chapter 12, 28 through 31, Jesus is asked the question, and Jesus answers the question. In Luke chapter 10, verses 24 through 37, Luke tells us that evidently at another time, a lawyer stands up and asks Jesus a question, Jesus asks him a question, and the lawyer answers the question. And then he asks another one, "Who is my neighbor?" Now, the answer on both occasions was, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul," and Mark adds strength. And the second commandment is like it, "You shall love your neighbor as yourself." Now, we might miss it, but as much as it is a very heavy distillation of the law of Moses, love God and love your neighbor, it is also a call to godly, biblical justice. This morning, I want us to turn our attention to the middle of the book of Zechariah, Zechariah chapter 7, because Zechariah is calling the people to listen to what God has to say, and he's calling them and reminding them of what has been said before, and that is to do godly justice. And this is what Zechariah says. He says, "The word of the Lord came to Zechariah, saying, 'Thus has the Lord of hosts said, dispense true justice and practice kindness and compassion each to his brother. And do not oppress the widow or the orphan, the stranger or the poor, and do not devise evil in your hearts against one another.'" Zechariah's message is short, but it's spoken of here and in the rest of the Old Testament. We can break it down really into two parts: the what and the who. The what and the who, and it is to those two that we're going to turn our attention this morning. It begins with, well, I'd say a four-sided pyramid. Now, I don't know what you think of when you think of a pyramid. There are many types of pyramids, but when I think of a pyramid, two things come to mind. One is like the Great Pyramids of Egypt, or the southern hemisphere of the United States, Peru, and areas where they're present, where you've got a four-sided pyramid, where if you look around it, you can see four sides. The other thing I think of is more like a three-sided die, where you've got three faces that are visible and one that's on the bottom. And I guess it really doesn't matter which of those you think of this morning. I was thinking about the three-sided die type one, but you can think of any. But it really describes what Zechariah and what the other prophets and what God himself through Moses said to the people about what justice is. There are four things, there are four sides of justice that Zechariah describes. The what. It begins, the first what is to dispense true justice. Now, two ways to think of justice. One way is to think of justice as doing what is right. And that is, if I'm titling my sermon, I'm going to say biblical justice is doing what is right to care for other people and to look after the needs of God's people. The second form of justice is what we might normally think of, or probably normally would have thought of up until the last couple of years, and that is a judge sitting in a courtroom wearing his long black robe or her long black robe and listening to a case and dispensing justice. When Zechariah here in Zechariah chapter 7 speaks of justice, defining it, when he says dispense true justice, he is speaking to the second. He's speaking about going into a court of law and somebody being the judge who listens to the case. They listen to the facts, they listen to the pleas, they listen to all of the information that is being presented, and at the end of that, they're going to make a decision on somebody's guilt or innocence, or somebody's right and somebody's wrong. They're going to make a decision in a case. And God says to them, dispense true justice. And this has been part of the Israelite law from the time that Moses received the law on the top of Mount Sinai, because this is what Leviticus chapter 19 says. The law that was given to the people, Leviticus more specifically to the Levites and the priests, Leviticus 19:15 says, "You shall do no injustice in judgment. You shall not be," listen to this, "you shall not be partial to the poor, nor defer to the great, but you are to judge your neighbor fairly." You know, don't look at the person who is poor and say, "Well, we're just going to give them what they want because they're poor and it'll help them out." Don't look at the wealthy and say, well, they're the important, prominent person in this case, so we're just going to side with them. God says to the people of Israel, to those who would be called to be the judges of the people in everyday matters, he said, judge fairly. Do no injustice, he says. Do no injustice in judgment. And so when Zechariah says, do justice, what he's talking about to the people is that they are to see that in the courts of their law, in the courts of the people, that justice is being doled out. The second thing that, the second side of the pyramid that Zechariah speaks of as biblical or godly justice is a two-part one. It's kindness and mercy, or mercy and compassion. It depends on which translation you use, how they translated those two words. The first of those words is a word that's very common throughout the Old Testament, and it's a very common concept for the people of Israel. It's in Hebrew, it's the word hesed. Actually, I should say that more phlegmy on the H. It should be more like the CH of school, but I can't do that this morning. I might not be able to preach the rest of my sermon. It's the word hesed, and it deals with covenant kindness, covenant responsibility. It's the kindness and mercy that is shown to somebody who is in a covenant with someone else. It might be the kindness or mercy that you would show your spouse. You know, you might be willing to put up with a lot of things from your spouse that you wouldn't put up with from your neighbor. You know, your neighbor comes over and is a little grouchy, you might walk away from him. You can't always walk away from your spouse, right? Somebody agrees with me. Sometimes the best thing to do is to walk away, but that's another sermon for another day. But it's kindness. It's mercy. It's looking out for somebody else in relationship with them and showing them kindness that they need. The other word is the word compassion, and it's again, it has one of those hard CH in the middle of it, so I'm not going to try to pronounce. I have them in my notes. I was going to pronounce them, but I can't do it this morning. But it's a root. The root of the word is actually the word that means womb. It says compassion, and it builds off the compassion that a mother would have for her child. You have compassion as a mother that is unequaled in this life. And Zechariah looks at the people and he says, what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to show kindness and compassion to people. And in the New Testament, we would look at it, and today we would probably think of the words mercy and grace. Kindness and compassion, mercy and grace. It's not a perfect match, but it really covers the sense of I don't always give you what you deserve, kindness, and I give you what you don't deserve, compassion, grace. It's looking at somebody and looking at both sides of a situation and saying, you know, you need a little latitude here. Or you need some extra loving there. Love isn't, I like this quote. I almost forgot it was a quote. I like this quote. I was reading a book this week on doing justice, and the author, Christy Burton, quotes one of my favorite theologians, Mr. Rogers. He says, no, seriously though, if you don't know, Mr. Rogers was a Lutheran minister. So he truthfully was a great theologian. A lot of what, if you could go back and watch his shows with that thought in mind, you realize that there are a lot of concepts of the Christian faith lived out the way it was supposed to be, that Mr. Rogers simply embodied. He didn't say a lot about faith, but he embodied it. And this is from him. He says, love isn't a state of perfect caring. It's an active noun like struggle. To love someone is to strive to accept that person exactly the way he or she is, right here and now. And I like that word, a struggle. Love is a struggle. I don't know that he necessarily meant it that way, but don't you know that a lot of times love is a struggle to care for somebody as they are right now? Mercy and compassion, kindness and compassion, is looking at people as they are right now and saying, I'm going to give you the grace of God because I know the grace of God in my life. The third thing, that the third side of this pyramid that Zechariah gets to, is he says, no exploitation. Don't take advantage of other people. Don't take advantage of the poor and the widow, the orphan and the alien. I know I mixed those up, but I want to see if you're thinking. The thing is we look at those words, and those words to us don't necessarily mean as much as they did to them. We look at the widow and the orphan, the alien and the poor, and yes, we understand what those mean by definition. You know, a widow is somebody who's lost her husband. An orphan is somebody who's lost both parents, generally. Although today we might say somebody who's lost one of their parents and the other one just isn't involved. But we know who the poor are, right? And we know who the alien is. But if we simply look at the definition of those, we're missing the point of both God and Zechariah. Because what they're talking about isn't a particular group of people as much as it is a class of people. Now, group and class are similar, but they're different. A group of people are people who share a lot of things in common. A class of people are a group of groups. I don't know the right way to describe them, but there's a difference between the two. And we look at the group, and you could say the widow, the orphan, the poor, and the alien. Well, there's a group of people. But they make up a class of people. They make up a class of people that are the ones who are the most vulnerable in society. If we were to look at it today, we might have to change who they are, but the poor, the alien, the orphan, the widow, they are the vulnerable who people would prey on and take advantage of, and often they would be oppressed. And Zechariah looks at them, and basically he's saying to them, stop taking away the means of making a living for these people. That's what he's talking about when he's talking about oppression. Stop doing things to keep these people down so they cannot make a living. Elsewhere, Scripture talks about taking away their homes and their lands. Well, if you live in an agrarian society, you need your home and you need your land to make a living. And Zechariah says the same thing that other prophets and God himself has said. Do not take advantage of the poor, the alien, the widow, and the orphan. And in fact, when we looked at Leviticus, when he talks about not giving deference to the poor or to the wealthy, he's talking about those vulnerable when he says the poor. The fourth side of that triangle of what is, well, I'm going to say do willfully or no willfully wronging others. No willfully wronging others. You know, there are times in life when we do something that wrongs somebody else. And it happens, and justice would say, true justice would say, well, we make amends. But what we're talking about here is not something that happens accidentally, but in verse 10, he's talking about doing it intentionally. Doing it intentionally looking at a situation and taking advantage of someone else. Things like making false claims. Where you look at somebody else and you claim things about them that just are not true. Or cheating them. Like I said, Jesus talked a lot about justice, though we don't always see it. When he complains about the Pharisees and the leaders of the people making his father's house, a den of robbers, he's talking about cheating other people. And stealing, taking something that doesn't belong to you. And if you read through the prophets, if you read through the Old Testament, you find that one, stealing was present, and two, God said, don't do it. Don't take things that do not belong to you. The things that are yours, the things that you earn, okay, but do not take things that do not belong to you. And so Zechariah is talking to the people, and he's saying, in part, he's saying to them, these are the things that your fathers were called to that they didn't do. You know, they were called to dispense justice, to practice kindness and compassion, to not exploit the poor and the vulnerable, and to not willfully wrong other people. And so that's the what. Now we turn our attention to the who, and honestly, we've already kind of mentioned the who as we've talked about the what, but the who, it begins with the vulnerable. You know, two groups of people that we're going to consider, the vulnerable and those with financial means. Zechariah kind of speaks to both of them, the vulnerable and those with some financial means. And he begins with the vulnerable by talking about the widows and the orphans. The widows and the orphans, those who had lost the one who was the primary and many times the only means of making a living. In the society that Zechariah is writing to, there weren't a lot of employment opportunities for women. That's just the way society was. Very few opportunities, and even fewer of them, that God said that they could be involved in. Because he said things like, don't be a prostitute, and those kinds of things that sometimes were the only ways that a woman who had no one to care for her could make money. Orphans were often taken advantage of because they had nobody to protect them. Nobody to look after them. Nobody to guide them and train them. And so they were often the ones who were taken advantage of. There's also the poor. We can describe poor. Poor is not having enough of something. In this particular case, God is speaking about those who are poor. He's talking about those who don't have enough to provide the basic necessities of life. It doesn't say why they're poor. Maybe they got hit hard by the last drought. Maybe they're just bad money managers. Maybe, you know, we could go on and surmise. There's lots of reasons that people become poor. We might even move that down a step and say more of the destitute concept. Down and out with no way up. but the poor would be taken advantage of. You get them to come in and work for a rate that is, well, under the going rate. You pay them poorly, you treat them poorly, you take advantage of them. That's what happens to the vulnerable. The alien, the one who isn't a part of your people, who is now residing among you. And there are a lot of reasons that people became aliens. Some of them, like we're hearing about today from the Ukraine, are refugees. Something was happening, war was taking place, and they got driven out of the land where they lived. Some of them, like many people, come to the United States today as aliens. They come looking for a better life. There's something about where the people of Israel were that gave them hope. And so they would come and live amongst the people of Israel. Or maybe some of them had been transposed. No, that's not the right word. Well, they had been moved from...
Deported.
There is a good word. Thank you, Karen. Deported. They had been deported from their home countries to a foreign country. The Assyrians did a lot of this. The Assyrians who moved some people into the northern regions of Israel, into what would become Samaria and Galilee by the time of Jesus' day. The Assyrians moved in foreign peoples and intermixed peoples, because the more people are intermixed, the less they have in common and the less likely they are to rise up and do war. And some of them were simply sent there. But whatever the case, they're living in a land that's not their own. They don't know the customs. They don't have a home. They don't have land. So what happens? Well, naturally, people would begin to take advantage of them. But today, if we were going to look at this group of people, we may have to change it. Or we may have to add to it. Because in our society today, we don't have widows and orphans with the same problems. Orphans, well, probably we don't have as many orphans because the mortality rate, or the age of mortality on average is higher. So we don't have as many orphans. Widows, well, we live in a culture today where, as a woman, you can find a job. You can have some things provided for you. You can live without having a husband or a son or an uncle or a father to continue to look after you. Today, we might change those and say the divorcee and the child from a one-parent home. It's staggering when you look at the statistics how being a part of a one-family home affects a child and how often they become vulnerable to people who will take advantage of them. But literally, God is speaking through Zechariah to the people about the vulnerable in society. Those people who do not have a way to take care of them for themselves. And we might think of others in our day. As I was simply going through this and studying, I thought about a few. One of them would be people with disabilities. People with disabilities are vulnerable in our society. The unborn child, vulnerable in our society. People who simply live in undesirable locations. Refugees. Aliens, both legal and illegal. And the thing is, as we look at this, this isn't simply for us today. It isn't just a national thing. In fact, if you look at the nation of Israel, it's probably smaller in size than the state of Illinois. So we already have a much bigger understanding of a nation, but this is actually things that, because of our economy and our world today, it is ours to consider, not just locally, but globally. How do we think about the vulnerable in the world today? The other side of that coin of the vulnerable is those with financial means. And I know that he doesn't necessarily say this, but he says, do not devise evil in your hearts against one another. He's separating the one another from the vulnerable. Don't oppress the vulnerable, but also don't take advantage of one another. You know, he's saying the people who are, well, really, there's two possibilities. The people who are like you, who live on the same financial rung, the same societal privilege rung that you live on, don't take advantage of them. Don't look for ways to take what isn't yours, what are willfully wrong people that live on the same line as you. And then there are those that are above you. You know, we take advantage of the vulnerable. They're the people who are lower than us. But he also says, don't willfully wrong those who live on the same social status as you or above you. You know, and this again, this is a global thing, but we have to ask when we think about those four things that make up that pyramid, how does that look as we interact with the vulnerable and other people that are like us or we would think that are doing better than us? Treating others with respect. This is from Richard Patterson in his commentary on Zechariah. He says, treating others with respect both dignifies them as a people made in God's image and honors God as the creator of all. And then he cites a couple passages from Proverbs. He says, these representative ethical standards are extracted from the Mosaic Law, were the legislative glue that bonded the covenant community together as the people of God. These four sides of this pyramid that we are to look after and to care for and to do justice, to not oppress and to not willfully wrong other people, these four things are, well, they are the representative ethical standards of the Mosaic Law. Just like Jesus could say the two greatest commandments are love God and love men, Zechariah is saying and telling us this is what it looks like to love people and to love God. This is what it looks like to do justice. Jesus says similar things when he gave his disciples the definition of authenticity and a plan for how they were to draw other people into making disciples. In John, he simply says, love one another. Unconditional love. Unconditional love, like Jesus showed them and he shows us. Doing justice. And that's what biblical, that's what godly justice looks like. And that's what we are called to do. Let's stand together as we sing this next song this morning.